The reading for today is Ruth chapter 4 verses 1 to 22. So Ruth chapter 4 verses 1 to 22. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat down there just as the guardian redeemer he had mentioned came along. Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, "Sit here," and they did so. Then he said to the guardian redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so, but if you will not, tell me, so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line." "I will redeem it," he said. Then Boaz said, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." At this, the guardian redeemer said, "Then I cannot redeem it, because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it." Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the guardian redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself." And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today you are witnesses." Then the elders and all the people at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah." So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. When he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than 7 sons, has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son," and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This, then, is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Amminadab. Amminadab, the father of Nahshon. Nahshon, the father of Salmon. Salmon, the father of Boaz. Boaz, the father of Obed. Obed, the father of Jesse. And Jesse, the father of David.
Thank you very much, Phil. And welcome, everyone. If I'm an unfamiliar face to you, my name's Ian Taylor, and I'm the associate pastor here at Emmanuel Westbury. It's really good to have you with us. Particular warm welcome if you're with us for the first time, and to students. Now, I think that trust matters more than ever in today's world. Who will the Americans trust when they go to the polls in November? In the UK, do we trust our politicians and scientists enough to guide us through the pandemic? The higher the stakes, the more trust matters. Well, what about when the stakes are as high as they can get? Can you trust your life to Jesus? Now, we learned last week that Christianity isn't about trusting a philosophy or trusting in your own performance. It's about trusting in a person, Jesus. And maybe you're watching and you wouldn't call yourself a Christian, but you're intrigued and you're wondering, do I want to trust Jesus? Is he trustworthy? Maybe you're already a Christian and you're wondering, should you keep trusting Jesus? I have found during lockdown that the inner voices in my head have been much louder than normal. And not being able to socialize in a normal way, it's been harder and harder to kind of ignore those inner voices which say, oh, Ian, you're not qualified to do your job. Or, Ian, you're not a good enough husband. You're not a good enough father. Ian, you don't care enough about others. You don't even really care about God, do you? And in those moments, it's a real battle. Do I trust those voices? Should I be listening to those voices? Or do I trust Jesus? Is Jesus worthy of our trust? And my prayer is that in today's passage, we're going to answer that question. Now, you might be thinking, hang on, as I listen to that passage being read, well, it's all about Boaz. How does a story about Boaz going to help us decide whether or not to trust Jesus? Well, it's because in the book of Ruth, Boaz is meant to show us what God is like. And even more than that, Boaz shows us what Jesus is like. And that's because all three of them are described as redeemers. Now, we know already Boaz is a redeemer. But the only other famous redeemer in the Old Testament is God. Think back to Exodus when God rescues his people from slavery in Egypt. And listen to how he describes himself. This is from Exodus 6. He says, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will deliver you from slavery to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm, with great acts of judgment. You could look at Psalm 34:22. Ed's already given us a verse from Isaiah where God is described as a redeemer. God is a rescuer. That's the Old Testament. And then along comes Jesus, AD 30. How is he described? A redeemer. Galatians 4. We're told Jesus came to redeem those under the law. Hebrews chapter 9, we're told Jesus secured our eternal redemption. And there are more verses I could give. But here's the point. As Boaz goes about redeeming, which is what he does in chapter 4, he's doing the stuff God does. And more specifically, he's doing the stuff Jesus does. So as we look at Boaz, we get a glimpse of God and Jesus. So this afternoon, as you hear about Boaz, ask yourself, is he the sort of person I could trust? Because if I can trust him, I can trust Jesus. So let's crack on. And the first thing we see in these verses is Boaz's commitment to redeem Ruth and Naomi. Back in chapter 3, Boaz had dropped this bombshell. There was another redeemer more closely related to Naomi and Ruth. And this guy, this other redeemer, he had first dibs on redemption. So if he chose to act, the marriage between Boaz and Ruth, it's off. But Boaz had said to Ruth, he said, look, I will do everything I can to make sure I'm the one who marries you. Big words. And so the moment Ruth and Boaz go their separate ways in chapter 3, Boaz, he's off into town to make good on his promise. And we finished chapter 3 last week with Naomi saying to Ruth, verse 18, if you can look down chapter 3, Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for Boaz will not rest until the matter is sorted today. Boaz means business. So chapter 4, verse 1. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat down there just as the guardian and redeemer he'd mentioned came along. Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over and sat down. And Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, "Sit here." And they did so. Now, in Old Testament times, if you wanted to get anything done, you went to the city gates. Okay, it's where disputes were settled. It's where deals were done. So when Boaz finds this other redeemer, the one who's closer in line, and he says, "Come and sit with me," he's saying, "Look, there's some business we need to take care of. And this business, it's too important to happen in private." So Boaz calls over the city elders, who would have been respected officials, and says, "There is something big happening, and I need you to be my witnesses." Do you see how seriously Boaz is taking this? He promised Ruth he could do everything he could to redeem her. And his promises aren't empty. He gets straight down to business. Okay, so he's got his audience. What are they going to say? What's he going to say? Verse 3. Then he said to the guardian redeemer, "Naomi, who's come back from Moab, is selling a piece of land that belonged to our relative, Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders, my people. If you'll redeem it, do it so. But if you will not, tell me so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line." Turns out Naomi actually does own a piece of land. Now, some commentators have read that and gone, "Well, if she owns land, she can't really be poor. I thought she was poor. What is it?" Well, the truth is, we're not exactly certain about this piece of land. But what we do know is that Naomi and Ruth were so poor that Ruth had to go out into the fields to collect scraps of barley. She basically had to beg. And you don't do that unless you have to. So here's Boaz. He's saying to this other redeemer, he's saying, "Look, Naomi's land, okay, it's up for sale. And if you don't buy it, I will." Verse 4, look down. The other redeemer says, "I'll redeem it." All of a sudden, the plot to this story just blows up. You see, ever since Boaz turned up in those barley fields back in chapter 2, he noticed Ruth. We've been wondering, when will they get together? But if this redeemer, this other guy, if he steps in to rescue Ruth and Naomi, then all hopes of the marriage with Boaz and Ruth are gone. Well, if Boaz was surprised by the other redeemer's response, he doesn't show it. In fact, what he does next is a masterclass in negotiation. Having got the other guy's hopes really high, he now brings them crashing down with a very important reality check. Verse 5, have a look down. Then Boaz said, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." Now, what exactly is Boaz saying here? And to kind of explain this, I've got some props, okay? So just bear with me. Let's try and get this sorted out. Here we go. So here's the land. Here's Naomi's land. Here's this kind of other redeemer. And Boaz is saying to him, he says, "Look, here's the land. And if you want to buy it, you can. It's yours." Let me put him back here, where I can see him. "But," Boaz says, "just so you know, if you buy the land, Ruth comes with it. If you buy the land, you're also getting Ruth. And by that, Boaz means something quite specific. He's saying, look, if you choose to buy this land, you're going to have to help Ruth have a child. Remember that? That was one of the duties of a redeemer, to help widowed families where there was no heir. If you get the land, you're going to need to help Ruth have a child. Now, here's a stinger, okay? It's all to do with inheritance. Because when Ruth's little child is born, all the land that this guy thought, all the land he's bought, all the land he hopes to keep, it all passes to the child. It all passes to the child. The redeemer who spent all his money loses all the land and it goes to the child. It's a masterstroke from Boaz. He's saying, are you sure you want to buy that land? Are you sure you want it to pass straight to the child after you've spent all that money buying it? You won't get to keep it. Well, the redeemer, he's got his calculator out. He's doing the maths. And very quickly, he realizes he can't afford it. It's too costly. Verse 6, at this, the guardian redeemer said, well, then I can't redeem it. It might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I can't do it. The redeemer, he's out the picture. He steps away. Boaz steps forward. The marriage is back on. Verse 7. Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, I'm reading this like terms and conditions. I'm going to read it quite quickly, okay? One party took of a sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the guardian redeemer said to Boaz, buy it yourself. And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, today you are witnesses that I have brought from Naomi all of the property of Elimelech, Kilian, and Mahlon. I've also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with this property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from among his hometown. You are witnesses today. You see that contrast between Boaz and the stranger, okay? For the stranger, redemption is all about maths, okay? If the numbers add up, he's in. But if the numbers add up and don't make sense for him or don't help him, he's out. He's not interested. But you see, the numbers for Boaz are just the same. Financially, it makes no sense for Boaz to redeem Ruth and Naomi. But Boaz lives by a different sort of maths. For Boaz, this isn't about profit. It's about love. He loves Ruth, so he'll pay the price. It doesn't matter how high it is. And it's more than just love. You see, Boaz isn't even ultimately doing this for himself. Look down at verse 10. You see why he's redeeming Ruth? Verse 10, to maintain the name of the dead, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or his hometown. Boaz is redeeming Naomi and Ruth and their land. He's doing it for their sake, so that their family name will continue. He is prepared to reach into his pocket and go into the red for them, so they'd have a future. It is very costly kindness. Now, although this story is all about Boaz, he is the hero, not us. There is some application for us here, okay? When we show costly kindness to others, it pleases God very much. So boys and girls here, listen out. I'm speaking to you, to the youth, to students, as you're wondering, what should your priorities be at university? Forget about being top of the class. Forget about excelling at sport. Forget about maximizing your experience in the next 3 years. It matters far more to God that you are known for being kind, particularly when it costs you. When helping the unpopular classmate means others are laughing at you, you remember that God is smiling at you. To those of you who lead teams at work or employ staff, will you be like Boaz? Will you be the sort of boss who is known for his kindness, even when it costs you personally? At times like this, when financial viability is more important than ever, you will shine like a star if your kindness is costly to others. Kind with your time, kind with how you manage your budgets. So that's verses 1 to 10. They tell us what Boaz has done for Ruth and Naomi. Verses 11 to 16, they tell us what Boaz has won for Ruth and Naomi, how Boaz has changed their lives. Verses 11 to 12, well, those are the elders, the ones that Boaz said, hey, come and witness this redemption. They just break out into a prayer of celebration, asking God to bless this new family in a way that he's blessed the families of old. And suddenly the light is turning a golden, soft color. And we sense we're watching the closing scenes of a story that is ending happily ever after. A story that's ending well for Ruth. Verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. When he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive and she gave birth to a son. Do you remember how we met Ruth back in chapter 1? A husband recently dead, no children, outsider from Moab. But a redeemer has turned her life upside down. Because of Boaz, she has a husband. Boaz. Because of Boaz, she has a child. Because of Boaz, she's welcomed into an Israelite family. She's no longer an outsider. She belongs. The story's ending well, too, for Naomi. Verse 14, the women said to Naomi, praise be to the Lord who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He'll renew your life, sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth. And then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. So as the camera zooms out from this scene, from this family for the final time, we're left with a beautiful image of an elderly lady. An elderly lady who's lost her husband, lost both her sons, who had come back home to Bethlehem wanting to be called Mara because her life was bitter. An elderly lady who had looked to the future with no hope of a family line continuing. An elderly lady who felt utterly empty. But now, because of a redeemer, her arms are full. She has a grandson called Obed. And he will cry, and he will squeal, and he will keep the family awake at night. But with him around, her life is different. He is her hope. And Naomi can grow old, see out her last days with joy. And it's all because of Boaz, the Redeemer who took away all their debts, paid for them himself. The Redeemer who blew away their hopelessness, gave them a future. The Redeemer who has filled them up to overflowing. The Redeemer who can be trusted. Of course, the book of Ruth doesn't end there, does it? In verses 17 to 22, we've got this family tree. And it's quite an odd way to finish, really. So the question is, you know, like, why does the author finish with a family tree? Well, I think it's because the story of redemption, it didn't start with Ruth and Naomi and Boaz, and it doesn't end with them. You see, from the very beginning, God, the great Redeemer, has been pursuing his people with loving kindness. And he didn't stop pursuing them with Boaz, or even King David, Obed's grandson. If you've got Bibles, flick, if you could, to Matthew chapter 1. Flick across to Matthew chapter 1, which is where we'll finish. That is the first book in the New Testament, the first account of Jesus' life, Matthew chapter 1. Boaz and Ruth and Obed, they're in another family tree. A family tree that ends, verse 16, and Jacob, the father of Joseph, the mother of Mary, and Mary was the mother of Jesus, who's called the Messiah. You see, the little love story set during a harvest in Bethlehem is part of a much bigger love story where a much greater Redeemer steps out of the shadows to help. And yes, this great Redeemer, Jesus, yes, he's like Boaz, but he's also nothing like Boaz at all. Boaz went to the city gate to redeem two vulnerable women. Jesus went to the cross to redeem millions and millions, to redeem anyone, everyone across the ages who puts their trust in him. When Boaz redeemed Ruth and Naomi, he paid the price of a small field in a dust bowl town. When Jesus redeemed his people, it cost him everything. He is the God, the King, who has the deeds to the whole universe. And when he came to die on the cross, he gave up all of these riches to cover our debts, debts we could never pay off on our own. And Boaz, he was a man of good standing, of reputation. Well, Jesus, he was the one man in history who had nothing to be ashamed of. There were no skeletons in his closet. There were no regrets. He had no browser history to delete. His accusers had to make up lies to find an excuse to kill him. And he gave up all of that honor and all of that reputation, all of his perfection, to die in shame on the cross so that we might be lifted up. And he didn't need to. The maths of the cross didn't work out in Jesus' favor. The maths took him into the red and then killed him. But with Jesus, it was never about the maths. It's because he loves you. Because he wants you to have a future, hope that will not end with your death. Now, does that sound like the sort of person worth trusting? If he was willing to give his life for you, are you willing to entrust your life to him? If he was willing to give his life for you, are you willing to entrust your life to him? If you're wondering whether Jesus really cares for you, will you remember the cross? When out of love for you, Jesus said, to hell with the maths. I'm going to pray. Father, we thank you that out of your loving kindness, you have gone after us. You have pursued us. You have even been willing to send your son to die on the cross to fill us up, to give us hope. Thank you. Amen.
Thank you so much, Ian, for a really helpful sermon. We've got some questions on Pigeonhole. Thank you for posting those comments and questions. Ian, we're going to just take you through maybe a couple of those, if that's okay. Just a quick one first. Can you just clarify why it's important that Ruth is, or what's the relevance that Ruth is Moabite? I know we had it back at the beginning of the series, But aren't Israelites not supposed to marry foreign women? How does that work? And why is that relevant here?